Welcome, listeners, to the third season of The Cozy Corner with Alexia Gordon. I'm Alexia Gordon, author and your podcast host. Tune in and join me as I chat with authors writing cozy and traditional mysteries. You won't find explicit violence, sex, or gore. You will find intricate plots, engaging characters, and brilliant writing. Thanks for listening. Hello, listeners. Welcome to another episode of The Cozy Corner with Alexia Gordon. I'm Alexia Gordon, author and host of the podcast. My guest today is Amanda Flower, author of Farm to Trouble, the first farm-to-table mystery. Welcome, Amanda.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Oh, as I mentioned, Farm to Trouble is the first novel in a brand new series. So would you please tell us about your story?
It is set in Western Michigan, near Traverse City, and it's in Cherry Country. So I have a family farm that is kind of in financial ruin, and the daughter of the farmer, who is a producer in LA, decides to come back to Michigan to save the family farm. She makes kind of a poor decision by going into business with a shady investor to help her finance the farm's revival. And he shows up dead at the locals' farmer's market. And she, as a result, is the prime suspect. And her father, who really detested this investor, is also a prime suspect. So as amateur sleuth books go, she has to get involved in order to keep them both out of prison.
Is always a good reason to get involved.
Right.
Now, foodie listeners are probably familiar with the farm to table movement, but for those of us who might be unfamiliar with it, would you please explain what it's about and what inspired you to use it as a basis for your new series?
Yeah, so the farm to table movement is restaurants and farms and also small local markets and things like that are making partnerships in order to know where their produce, meat, and other foods come from. And so they, you know, sell directly from farms. And in some parts of the movement, not all of it, it's organic farming. So they know that there's no pesticides or herbicides in the food or fertilizers and things like that. So I think as people worry more about their health and are more aware of what they're eating, it's becoming more and more popular.
Now, another thing that's popular is farmers markets, which you mentioned. You don't usually find dead bodies at them, but you can find lots of good fresh right. farm food. So what are some of your favorite farmers markets?
I love farmers markets, and I write a lot of almond mysteries as well. So I go there. I live in Ohio, so I live close to Amish country, so I go there pretty often. There's a Hartville market kind of just at the beginning of Amish country, and it's massively huge. There's like 300 vendors there on market days. So that was kind of the inspiration for the market in Cherry Glen, the name of the town in this book. And then in my own little town, we have a farmer's market and it's really fun to go to because it's, you know, the farmers in the area, and there's also people in the area that bake goods and things. Now this year, because of the pandemic, they didn't have it this summer, just for safety reasons, but I'm hoping it'll be back next summer.
So too. I'm actually in Newport, Rhode Island, and they did manage to have their much smaller farmers market here with some outdoors and social distancing and masking precautions. So there's hope.
Yeah.
Now, you set your mystery in the small town of Cherry Glen, Michigan, which is very different from Detroit or even Mackinac Island, which is what many of us think about when we think Michigan. So how do you
How do you bring your town to life for readers who don't think of a farming town as typical Michigan and may not automatically picture that in their minds?
A lot of Western Michigan is rural. So, I think because I'm from Ohio, and Ohio is similar in that regard because we have big cities like Cleveland and Cincinnati, but a good chunk of the state is rural. So it doesn't take much of a car drive to get like pretty far out into the country, into farm country. So Michigan's not that different, and Michigan's a state because it's a neighbor state to mine that I visit very often. And last October, my husband and I went there for vacation, particularly because I wanted to set this series in Western Michigan. And the reason I picked it mostly was because I love the lakes and the national lake shore there. The Sleeping Bear Dunes is in that area as well. So it's a very beautiful area. So that's why I was inspired to set it there.
Sounds great. Now, your protagonist Shiloh wants to turn the family farm into a certified organic farm. Now, you kind of alluded to this before, but how does an organic farm differ from a traditional farm?
Yeah, so an organic farm doesn't use pesticides or herbicides on their fields and things like that. And they don't use preservatives on their produce. So, when you go to the grocery store and you buy organic, apples, and then you buy apples that aren't certified organic, and you've brought them home and left them on your kitchen counter for a week, the organic ones would go bad much more quickly because they don't have the protectives to keep them, red and fresh. But at the same time, there's no chemicals on them, so that, that's important to a lot of people not to be ingesting things like that. But to be certified organic, it's a very long process, and each state has its own rules for it. So she's in this book is thinking about it, and the next book she's starting that process. But I think it's going to be a few books just to be realistic about how long it takes that she's actually going to get the rubber stamp.
You also talk about another kind of farming in your book, wind farming. So, what is a wind farm?
Yeah, so wind farm is those big turbines that you may see in different parts of the country. I have family in Iowa, so they're very popular in the plain states because the wind just rushes across those that open flat land, and they go up hundreds of feet in the air. The turbines are the propellers are hundreds of feet across. And it's a green way to produce energy. So it's a wonderful way to produce energy. However, as the book says, it's also controversial because of the impact on birds during migration. So there's laws in place that there are certain places that wind turbines can't be based on migration of songbirds and other birds. But that seems to be, as I allude to in the book, a moving target as both sides are lobbying against having, the company, energy companies want their turbines where they can get the most wind, and the bird people are worried about birds and if they're going to get hurt by the turbine.
So everything's got a little controversy behind it.
Yeah.
Now, your bio states that you're starting your, or I guess started by this point, your own organic farm. So what inspired you to do that, and how did you transition from library science and crime fiction to farming?
Well, I it's kind of a funny story. It's mostly because of, well, it is because of my husband. So when I met him, he had a couple years before I met him bought a farm. He's a recording engineer, And his plan, which we're actually doing right now, is he's building a recording studio out there. So it's a good, tranquil place for someone to go out and create music. But at the same time, we have quite a few acres. So I just thought it would be, I have always loved to garden. I have a huge garden at my house. And I was like, well, you know, this, we either kind of just let it go wild or we can do something with it. And it's half of the property is forested. So we're going to leave it and let it, you know, do its natural thing in the woods. But where it was plowed, when it was actual working farm, we're working on turning it to organic farm. But just like Shiloh, it's going to take a few years to get to that level of certification.
Now, at the beginning of Farm to Trouble, Shiloh is struck by how much her hometown, which was kind of dying out when she left it, has sort of come back to life by the time she's returned. So did any real life small town revival stories spark this theme?
Yeah. So when I was a young librarian right out of grad school, in my early 20s, I lived, one of the reasons I write a lot of Amish books is I lived in Amish country and worked in a library out there. And the town I lived in was in Ohio, but it was a few hours from where I am now. And it was super small. When I moved there, the big news was they got a Walmart and everyone was like super excited. And I had moved from Akron, Ohio, which is not a huge city, but it's a city. So I was like, "Well, this is small." And then I went back a few years later to visit, and it's just gotten so big compared to what it was. It's almost like a suburb. It's at the edge of Columbus, Ohio. So it's getting kind of like that urban sprawl in its direction. So it was just a shock to me how much it had changed in just probably like 10 years. So Shiloh was gone 15 years. So I could definitely see that happening. I mean, the options I think for her town were either it was going to go more into decay or it was going to be revived. And of course, I wanted it to be an adorable, cozy town, so I decided to revive it.
But that revival sort of gets at another source of tension in the book. You know, you talked about the tension between the renewable energy folks and the birding folks and the park ranger. But there's also the tension between the old way, which sort of feels safe and familiar, although perhaps not sustainable, compared to the new way, which is scary and risky, but maybe more sustainable in the long run. So how do you use these tensions that aren't necessarily directly related to the actual crime happening, but are still there? So how do you use that to help drive your story?
Yeah, I think they are tensions that for me are easy to write about because I do write so much, I guess, rural cozy mysteries, like out in the country. And they're tensions that I see all the time. So where my husband and I have our farm, we can definitely see that all the time. You know, during the political season and stuff, there was definitely, if there was some kind of, you know, initiative for, you know, runoff from farming or something like that, to keep waterways clean and whatnot, there was always some kind of placard or sign at a different farm that was very anti making the changes. And, you know, you just, when you're there during, especially like a political time, you feel the tension between neighbors because it's, you know, both, everyone feels so passionate about it. Like they're either like, I want to do it the way I've always done it. This is the way my grandpa did it. Leave me alone. Or there's other people that are like, no, this could be a better way that like my grandchildren can do it. But if I don't make this change, they might lose the farm because it's going to be completely destroyed because we're not taking care of it. So I think it's just ingrained in rural America.
Getting back to the bird watching aspect, which I was surprised to learn how popular bird watching actually is. It does play an important part in your story. First of all, are you a bird watcher?
I am not the extent of the bird watcher of that my brother is or one of my really close friends. So I have a very close friend that she kind of inspired the idea of the bird watcher portion of the story because she told me about the turbines and wind power that's currently being fought against in Lake Erie, which of course is the lake that touches Ohio. The electrical company here wants to put turbines there because wind comes so fast across the lake, but it's also a major migration route for birds in the spring and the fall. So it's been fought like it's going on years. So she was telling me about that, and I was like, well, and then Lake Michigan has all of the Great Lakes are in the same boat with because that's the way songbirds travel. They travel a lot of times across those lakes to get to Canada and back to Mexico and everything. So it really inspired that. And she knows everything you could possibly know about birds. Like she spends every day she goes birding, and she's a full-time chemistry professor at a university I used to work at, but she'll get up at like 3 in the morning to be in a spot to see a bird that someone reported. She's like hardcore. I just more do it for fun at my farm. I'm like, oh, there's an oriole, and I'll write it down, but not to the same extent she does it.
So what are some tips for someone who might be interested in bird watching, either for the sort of fun aspect of, participating in like the backyard bird count, or someone who's more interested in the environmental impacts and the bigger issues of the wind farms versus migratory bird patterns, things like that?
Yeah, there are, birding is a huge, huge, huge activity. And what I would say there is an app, and it's also a website called eBird. And that's where a lot of people record their bird counts. And you could be anyone from like me who just kind of reports on my farm, where I may have like I'll see like a 50 varieties of a bird in a year, or someone like my friend that travels, she goes on bird destination vacations like New Zealand and stuff. So where she sees like thousands upon thousands of different varieties and birds and things like that. So that would be a good place to start. But there's also like at your local library or the bookstores, there are a ton of identification bird books. I think I would tell people like every state has its own bird book, which I think people don't know. So whatever state you're in, go get the little pocket guide and start there. Just go to the if you have a backyard or if you're in an apartment, go to a park or something and like take your little book, and you'll be surprised how many different birds there are. And how many varieties they are once you start looking. And it's a great ho hobby. I wish I had more time for it, but I would love to go on a destination birding vacation, but maybe someday.
Another surprising thing in the book was Shakespearean theater, which is something that many readers expect to find in a mystery set in a small farming town. Just like many places have an amazing variety of birds, many small towns have an amazingly good local original theater. So what are some of the joys of local theater?
I think the joys of local theater, for one, it gives people that have the love of theater the opportunity to participate when, not everyone is necessarily destined for Broadway or Hollywood or wherever, but they still, it's something they enjoy. I think of it the same way, like I personally can't act or do anything theater related, but I do like to dabble in visual art. So I'll take an art class. Like I just finished an oil painting class. And it brings me joy, even though I know no one is ever going to buy one of my paintings because they're not that good. So I think it gives that opportunity. And also I think it builds community in the area. So like for the town of Cherry Glen to have this theater that people in the region come to, it's a bit of pride. And, you know, to say like we have, you know, even out here in the country, we have the arts, which is always something as a writer that I want to encourage. And, you know, we need the arts in school. We need the arts just in society to bring people joy.
So in one book, readers can learn about the environment and renewable energy and gardening and Shakespearean theater. They can also learn about gardening. So you give some tips for building a raised garden at the end of From to Trouble.
Yeah.
Now we're recording this interview right before Christmas. Your book comes out in February, which is the heart of winter. Not really the time of year people associate with things like gardening and growing and farming. But as you pointed out, a farm's hard work. So I'm assuming that's year-round hard work. So what are some wintertime tips that maybe urban or suburban gardeners can do now to get ready for spring?
Yeah, so at the back of the book where I talk about building the cinder block raised beds, that's something you can do in the winter, you know, as long as it's not actively sleeting or snowing to the point that it's uncomfortable to be outside. but you can at least build the raised beds so then and put the straw or grass in it so it can decay over the winter to make the ground, the inside of the bed more fertile. Something that we're doing that we do in the winter, and I actually include it in the second book for the farm tip in the back, but we take black plastic sheeting, and we have a lot of poison ivy and Multiflora rose, which are both invasive species out on our farm that just have taken over since the big farm that was there kind of went away. And it was, our farm was wild probably for 20 years. So it's a lot of work to get it into a place where you can actually grow something. So we take plastic black sheeting and put it on the fields and leave it there for at least 8 weeks. And when we take it off, it's just dirt because everything under it was starved of sunlight. And so now we can plow it and make something of it and kill all those invasive species. And sometimes we just replant clover or some native species on it, but it'll just, in that case, it won't be poison ivy, and which we have so much poison ivy out there, which is awful. So that's what we do. And then we also do a lot of, cutting back and trimming, which is easier to do when the leaves have fallen, that sort of thing.
Oh, and thank you for explaining what those black plastic sheets that I sometimes see spread over people's fields are for. Now I know.
Yeah.
Now, in between, sort of rehabilitating your farm, you're writing. You mentioned that you're working on the second mystery in this series, and you've also written other cozy mysteries. Would you like to tell us about some of your other series?
Sure. I've written, I think I have 37 cozy mysteries published, which is crazy to think about. But I also write the Magic Bookshop mysteries for Crooked Lane. I write two series for Kensington. One is the Amish Candy Shop mysteries, and the other is the Amish Matchmaker mysteries. And those are sister series. So they are set in the same Amish town. They just have different protagonists, which was really fun for me because I've written so many Amish mysteries over my career. I really didn't want to create another Amish town because you can't really make it that different. Like they all have a tea shop. They all have a yarn shop. And I was like, oh my gosh, I had to think of how to make it different again. So Kensington was very kind when they wanted me to write another Amish series to let me set it in the same setting. And then in addition to that, I write a series for Hallmark, which is I would call it a cozy private detective, and that's set in the Finger Lakes of New York. And it's the main character is a private detective, but it definitely has a cozy tone to the series.
Wow, that's an amazing. So, how do you keep all of those different series straight at the same time?
Sometimes it can be difficult. It was more difficult when I was writing. At one time, I was writing an Amish series for Berkeley and then another Amish series for a different publisher. This was years ago, and that was a little bit harder because they were both Amish. So, like, I'm like, is that Jebediah from that book or is that from the other book? But now the series are so different from each other. It's a it makes it easier, and I don't ever head jump in the same day. So if I'm working on the farm to table series in a day, even if I had an editor say like, "Hey, I need edits back tomorrow," like I just have to tell them like, "I'm gonna need 2 days because I need my brain to like shift out of." Out of this character, so I can not sound like her when I go into this other character. So, and all of my publishers have been kind about that. There's only been a couple times where they've needed like a really sharp turnaround, and I really had to like beg, like, no, you don't want me to like have an Amish voice in this magic book. So please give me a little more time.
Now you mentioned the next farm to table mystery. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so the second one is called Put Out to Pasture, and it's set in October at the Bellamy farm. So the main character's name is Shiloh Bellamy, and she's that the family farm she's trying to save. So Shiloh has this great idea. Well, sometimes Shiloh gets in trouble with her great ideas, but she has a great idea to have like a fall festival at the farm as a fundraiser so that she can raise money to rehabilitate her cherry orchard. So she has this farm festival, and unfortunately, kind of the local busybody for the town is found dead at the feet of the scarecrow on her farm. So Shiloh, of course, has to get involved in the investigation and learns that her closest friend, Christy, had a very public argument with this busybody just a few hours before. So Shiloh, being a good friend and also super nosy and curious, definitely pokes her nose in the investigation again. And then they learn some really interesting stuff. I won't give it away, but the busybody's life is not what they expected it was once they start digging into her past. So it was really fun to write. I actually turned it in last Tuesday, so it's pretty fresh
Oh.
on my mind.
Now, book one, From the Troubles, expected out in February 2021. Okay.
Yes.
And do you have a projected release date for book two?
It'll probably be February 2022. So the books are my source book series is they're coming out about a year apart. Which I know cozy readers they want them faster and faster. But I just write so many series that I was grateful source books gives me a little bit more breathing room.
Yes, and they've got plenty of your other books in the meantime to keep them going
Yeah,
until
there's
the
yeah.
second one comes out. So.
Definitely. There's I think I have 5 or 6 books coming out next year. I can't remember off the top of my head, but I definitely have I for sure I have 3 done. I probably have some I need to turn in.
So, where can readers connect with you to keep up with your different series and find out more about how your farm's going?
Yeah, so I love Facebook. So I share probably the most on my author page and Facebook, which is If you go on Facebook, it's facebook.com/author Amanda Flower. Or you can just search for Amanda Flower, and it should come up right away. There I share stuff about our farm. I'm not a very good cook, so sometimes I put videos up of me attempting to cook, so people seem to think that's amusing. And also a lot of stuff about my cats, who are always an inspiration to me. And then my website is amandaflower.com, so you'll have links to everything there. And then the other place you can find me is Instagram, where I'm Amanda Flower Author. So the author's at the end in that one. And that's actually the Instagram of my two cats, Mr. Tumnus and Reepa Cheap. So my publisher asked me to start an Instagram, and I was like, oh my gosh, another social media. I think all authors feel overwhelmed sometimes. So I was like, well, I'm going to make it for the cats, and people like it. They love my cats. So I think and I get to share more pictures of them. So I love it too.
Cats on Instagram are always super popular. So.
Yes, yes, yes. So one of the cats is sitting right here while we're doing this interview.
Well, thank you for joining me in the Cozy Corner today, Amanda. And thank you to your cat for joining in as well.
Thank you so much. I really had a lot of fun.
And thank you, listeners, for tuning in to another episode of The Cozy Corner with Alexia Gordon. My guest today is Amanda Flower, author of Farm to Trouble, the first farm-to-table mystery. I'm Alexia Gordon, your host. Until next time, goodbye.
Thanks, listeners, for joining me for another episode of The Cozy Corner with Alexia Gordon. If you enjoyed the show, please leave a 5-star rating or review wherever you listened. Follow the podcast on social media. I'm on Facebook as The Cozy Corner Podcast and Twitter and Instagram as podcast_cozy. Now you can support me on Patreon. Become a patron for as little as $3 a month and get a shout out on an episode of The Cozy Corner. Support at higher levels gains access to patron-only posts, thank you gifts, and giveaways. Sign up at www.patreon.com/authoralexiagordon. Thank you for your support, and thanks for listening. Until next time, goodbye.